Chapter 19. Friday morning in the hallway outside the courtroom, Esau Ruffin found me and had a pleasant surprise. Three of his sons, Al, Max, and Bobby, Alberto, Massimo, and Roberto, were with him, anxious to say hello to me. I had spoken to all three a month earlier when I was doing the feature on Miss Callie and her children. We shook hands and exchanged pleasantries. They politely thanked me for my friendship with their mother and for the kind words I'd written about their family. They were as soft-spoken, pleasant, and as articulate as Miss Callie. They had arrived late the night before to give her moral support. Esau had talked to her once all week. Each juror had been given one phone call, and she was holding up well but worried about her blood pressure. We chatted for a moment as the crowd pushed toward the courtroom and walked in together. They sat directly behind me. A few moments later, when Miss Callie took her seat, she looked at me and saw her three sons. The smile was like a bolt of lightning. The fatigue around her eyes vanished immediately. During the trial, I had seen in her face a certain amount of pride. She was sitting where no black person had ever sat, shoulder to shoulder with fellow citizens, judging a white person for the first time in Ford County. I'd also had hints of the anxiety that comes with venturing into untested waters. Now that her sons were there to watch, pride filled her face and there was no evidence of fear. She sat a bit straighter, and though she had missed nothing in the courtroom so far, her eyes darted everywhere, anxious to capture what was coming and finish her task. Judge Lupus explained to the jurors that in the penalty phase, the state would offer evidence of aggravating circumstances in support of its request for the death penalty. The defense would offer mitigating proof. He did not expect it to take long. It was Friday. The trial had already lasted forever. The jurors and everybody else in Clanton wanted Paget shipped off so life could return to normal. Ernie Gaddis correctly gauged the mood in the courtroom. He thanked the jurors for their proper verdict of guilty and confessed that he felt no further testimony was necessary. The crime was so heinous that nothing more aggravating could be added to it. He asked the jurors to remember the graphic photos of Rhoda in the swing on Mr. Deese's front porch, and the pathologist's testimony about her vicious wounds and how she died, and her children. Please don't forget her children, as if anybody could. He delivered an impassioned plea for the death penalty. He gave a brief history of why we, as good solid Americans, believed so strongly in it. He explained why it was a deterrent and a punishment. He quoted scripture. In almost 30 years of prosecuting crimes in six counties, he had never seen a case that so mightily begged for the death penalty. Watching the faces of the jurors, I was convinced he was about to get what he asked for. He wrapped it up by reminding the jurors that each had been selected on Monday after promising that they could follow the law. He read them the law enacting the death penalty. "The state of Mississippi has proven its case," he said, closing the thick green law book. "You have found Danny Paget guilty of rape and murder. The law now calls for the death penalty. You are duty-bound to deliver it." Ernie's spellbinding performance lasted for 51 minutes. I was trying to record everything, and when he finished, I knew the jury would hang Paget not once, but twice. According to Baggy, in a capital case, the defendant, after protesting his innocence throughout the trial and being nailed by the jury, usually took the stand and said he was very sorry for whatever crime he'd been denying all week. "They beg and cry," Baggy had said. "It's quite a show."